Sheikh is the founder of Shootema Group, a consultancy dedicated to the enhancement of human excellence based on the care and growth model. Born into a mining family in South Africa, Sheikh grew up in Johannesburg. After doing an honors degree in social anthropology at the University of Witwatersrand, he got a job as a graduate researcher with the Chamber of Mines of South Africa's research organization. Employed specifically by the Human Resource Laboratory of the organization, his work initially focused on the issue of conflict on the gold mines in South Africa. At the end of the overthrow of the apartheid regime, the mines were swept up in the upheaval that followed. The work he did led to the development of a framework for understanding trust in this very volatile environment. Using this basis of this research, he was asked to head the human. Is that correct?
Lead
the human.
Human resources laboratory.
Industry project.
Yeah.
Implement the insights. This is where the care and growth model originated. So it came out of conflict.
Conflict
in the gold mines. It was met with significant success within the mining sector. Such success, in fact, that Sheikh Ibrahim left his role with the Chamber of Mines and, along with a group of colleagues, to establish a consultancy where this model could be more widely disseminated. He has authored a number of books, and he is with us today. Inshallah, he is going to share his insights, his wisdom with us. Sheikh, we have about 45 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
That's very generous. Thank you very much. That's that I can power myself up. I need the energy. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Honored to meet you all. The way of being Muslim, is the direct inverse of the kind of human being which the modern secular world tries to create. The modern secular world tries to create a person who has is conscious of their rights, has a sense of this egalitarian spirit. Nobody can tell me what to do. Has a great discomfort with authority of any kind, and is deeply rebellious. And you see this in schools. You see this, people sending their children. You send your kind of good children that you sort of love and have sort of nurtured,
egocentric.
You send them to school and you get this little monster back who sort of has rights and is demanding things and threatens to take you to the state if you don't give them what they want. And when these people grow up, they become seriously unhappy and seriously dysfunctional people. They're unhappy because they don't understand that happiness is not the product of self-interest. Your happiness is the product of, in the first instance, the inverse of self-interest. Happiness is the product of the intent to serve, of being here to make a contribution. We try and tell these young people that whatever they want from life is the product of what they can get. And this is fundamentally flawed and wrong. In in any situation that you're in, you can base your intent on one of two possibilities, logically. You can either base your intent on what you're trying to get from the world, or you can base your intent on what you can give to the world. And that opposite is consistently true in any moment that you're in. Right now, you can either construct your engagement with this moment, what's in it for you, or how you can help, what you can contribute. If you base your engagement with the moment that you're in on the basis of what you're trying to get, the product of that is that you become insecure, you become discontented, you have a sense of being oppressed, and you have also a sense of conflict with the world around you. If you base your intent on what you can give, then the opposite is true. You become secure, you become contented and fulfilled, you have a sense of real power and autonomy, and you have a sense of harmony with the world around you. Let's look at them one by one. The issue of security. If I, you know, most people think, you know, if I base my security on owning things, having a job, provide, you know, getting money, having some assets, we have a sense that, you know, this is going to make me secure. But the problem is that if you think of one of these two variables, what you get from the world and what you give to the world, of those two, you have no power over what you get from the world. Everybody else in the world has power over that. You only have power over what you give. So if you're going to construct your sense of security on what you're getting, you will never be secure. However, because you've always got control over the quality of what you're giving in any situation that you're in, if you base your sense of security on the quality of what you're contributing, you will always be secure. So the difference between being insecure and secure is not how much you own, is not how big your salary is, it's not how many assets you have. It is whether you are dealing with the world around you on the basis of how you can serve and what you can give. In fact, you can go as far as to say that the more assets you have, the less secure you are. You don't own yourself into feeling secure. You own yourself into feeling insecure. Because there's no asset that you have that is accepted a responsibility to look after you. I mean, let's say, you know, many people think if they buy their house and they pay off the house and the house is now their own, the title deed is in their own safe, then they're secure. It's a very strange idea there, you know. I mean, if something makes you secure, then one of the things it'll do, it'll protect you. That's what the security industry does, it protects you. Now, if you think your house is going to protect you, I mean, apart from keeping the rain off your head, you're being really naive. I mean, if you walk up to a house and a thug jumps up, this house which you own, you've paid off the bankers, you walk up to the front door of your house and a thug jumps up from behind a bush and he starts to beat you, your house isn't going to throw a brick at the thug and say, hey, you can't hit him, he's mine. You know? In fact, the opposite is true. Not your house does not protect you. You end up having to protect your house. I mean, if the same thug broke into your house and started vandalizing it, you'd say, what are you doing? It's my house. So, and this is not just true for the house. It's any asset. There's no asset that you have that has accepted a custodial responsibility with regard to you. If you think that you are protected by your things, you are unutterably naive. Every single thing you have, you are the protector of. It does not protect you. So you don't own yourself into being secure. You also don't, there's nothing you can get from the world that's going to make you happy. If you base your happiness, it's the same logic as the security thing. If you base your happiness on what you're getting from other than you, because you have no power over what's coming from other to you, you're basing your happiness on something you have no power, you'll always be unhappy. Whereas if you base your happiness on the quality of your contribution, you'll always be happy. this issue of wanting some sense of autonomy and power. If I want something from the, if I want your watch, your ability to withhold the watch gives you power over me, which means you can manipulate me, which makes you dangerous to me. I'm under your thumb. Whereas if I shift my intent with my engagement of you and what I can give, you can't withhold the watch anymore. You can't manipulate me. I slip out from underneath your ability to manipulate me and I become powerful. Why? Because I'm giving attention to what I have power over, what I can give. And there's an implication to me wanting your watch. Because you're going to give it to me by the end of the evening. No. I mean, clearly, if I want your watch, we now know that your ability to hold the watch makes you dangerous to me. Because you can manipulate me. But I am a mean South African. And I really do want your watch. And if you thought this was serious, I was trying to get your watch, you'd probably experience me as a bit of a threat to you. So while I want the watch, you are dangerous to me and I'm dangerous to you. And when we're dangerous to each other, we're going to have conflict. If I shift my intent in my engagement from what I'm trying to get from you to how I can be helpful to you, you can't withhold the watch. I'm safe from you. But precisely because I'm trying to be helpful to you, rather than get something out of you, you are safe from me. And when I'm safe from you and you're safe from me, we have harmony. We have peace with each other. So these kuffar are leading our children astray. They're trying to convince our children that they can, that the world is, they can get whatever they want. Well, you know, you're not here to get anything. You're here to die. When you die, you don't take anything with you. When you die, you give everything unconditionally. You've been designed, your whole, the purpose of your life has been aimed at the greatest and most unconditional event of giving. So why on earth do we try and pump this nonsense into our children's head that they're here to succeed at the grand accumulation? It's insane. And Muslims do this too, to their children. And they don't recognize that actually by propagating that view, they're doing exactly the opposite of what they should be doing. Because, I mean, you know better than I do. How often does Allah not describe kufr in Quran as ingratitude? Okay. It's very common that he describes unbelief as ingratitude. And that people get punished for their ingratitude. And that at the same time, the greatest quality, attribute a human can have is gratitude. In fact, a synonym for kufr is ingratitude. Now, why is this significance based with regard to the thing I've just spoken about, this intent to serve? All giving happens in the world. I mean, by definition, you feed the hungry child, you confront the tyrant, you step out of yourself, you step into the world and you act. That's what all giving requires. There's a quality that enables that giving. And in order to understand that quality, we need to examine what giving actually means. Let's say, for instance, you know me as a person who, whenever I give to you, there's a little black book. There's an account. 2 weeks' time, I'm going to come. You know, have I given to you? You don't experience I've given to you. I've made an investment. Now, there's nothing wrong with investments, but you can't call that giving. So when have I given? It's when I've given to give away. Giving means giving to give away. So when you are dealing with the world around you, not in the spirit of trying to manipulate outcomes, trying to get from the world what you want, but willing to give away, that's only when you're giving. This capacity to give away is based on another reality, which is inside yourself. It's not in the hand, it's in the heart. And that is gratitude. Gratitude means you recognize that you've received in excess of your due. I mean, if we're having an interaction and I give you something and you give me back the value of what I've given you, it's like an equal for equal, that doesn't require any gratitude. I mean, you owe me what, you know. If I'm selling you eggs, and I don't know what the price of eggs would be here, but I mean, let's say, I don't know, what's the price of eggs? I suppose you know.
36.
I'm sorry? 36 shillings.
Yeah.
Okay, for an egg, yeah. Or for one egg. Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay, all right. So let's deal with one egg. I'm selling you an egg. You want the egg. I want your money. You give me your money, and I give you the egg. Or rather, I give you the egg first, and you give me the money. Do either of us owe each other any debt of gratitude? No, because we owe each other this. I owe you the egg, and you owe me the money. So what is gratitude? Gratitude isn't when it's like for like. Gratitude is that you know that you've received in excess of your due. You receive more than what you are owed. It is the insight that you know, looking at your life and your past, that you've received in excess of your due that enables you to give away. So this entire project of being here to give, of being here to serve, is based on a tranquil heart. It's based on the heart of a person who is grateful, who knows that they've received in excess of their due. These kuffar are cultivating people who have rights. They're cultivating people who have a fundamental sense of resentment about me. The inverse of gratitude is resentment. You know, when I'm resentful, I don't think I've been given it. I think I'm owed. I've not been given enough. So the project has to be to understand the kind of human being we're trying to cultivate going into the future. And this is not the kind of human being that the modern kafir materialist worldview creates. We are trying to cultivate a human being who can serve, who can serve unconditionally, because they are deeply grateful, because they know that they've received in excess of their due. In two senses. You know, we speak about the twin attributes of Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim. And I like to think of these two attributes as mercy for what's been granted,
yeah,
and mercy for what's been withheld. So let's first think of this in terms of your engagement with other human beings, other people. You know, this idea that other people's society, the system, owes you something, I mean, no matter how oppressed you think you are, it's just false. All of us wear woven fabric clothing. Maybe skins on your sheet, you know, on your feet, but that's about it. Otherwise, our ancestors all wore like skins. So where does the shirt come from? Well, it's got quite a history. You know, 2,000 years ago, no longer, 10,000 years ago, some very clever people discovered that you could take fiber, plant fiber, and spin it into yarn. And then sometime after that, some other clever people discovered that you could take this yarn and weave it into a fabric. And then 300 years ago, these people that we all love to hate, those bloody English, they gave the world some stuff. And then what they designed these big mechanical looms with the fine metallurgy for these needles to work that produces the conditions where every one of us today was a woven fabric clothing. These people who have collaborated to put the shirt on your back don't act like Bill Gates. Not one of them comes to you and say, here's my royalty. And that's just the shirt on your back. What about the collaboration? All of the things that constitute a modern life, the watch you're wearing, the phone in your pocket. Have you got the ingenuity to make any of this stuff? I mean, you are here because of the blessing, unconditional blessing conferred on you by other human beings. So we're just talking about the social other human beings. You know, not just the blessing that they've conferred on you, but also what they've withheld from you. I mean, you could not be a functioning human being if your parents didn't stand between you and disaster. You know, if you just suddenly decide, you know, little Abdul, he's now, we're going to treat him like he's an adult, keep the doors open, let him walk into the street, you will lose little Abdul. You know, it's precisely because you stand between the catastrophe and him that he survives. And that's true for every one of us. We are here because of a mercy granted, a mercy withheld by the slave, by the human being, let alone the Rabb. You know, so I'm sort of semi-conscious now rather than unconscious because my generous hosts gave me some chicken and some roti. And that's what's powering me now so that I can give you attention and stay awake. So what's inside me and what you're looking at here is roti, is a piece of chicken, and what's gone into the chicken is some grain and sunlight, and I'm a collage. I'm like a weaving of things from other than me. None of this stuff can I account for in the terms of my own cleverness. I have been granted my life. I've been granted me by other than me. In other words, I've been granted me by my Rabb. Not only that, not only this immense blessing which has informed who I am and keeps me alive, but of the catastrophe withheld. How many things could kill you right now? It's like an impossible sum. I mean, it's like, because you could be killed by anything from a microbe to a meteor falling out of the sky. You know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Horrible thoughts. I mean, if you consider all the things that go wrong, you should be sitting under the table right now. I mean, in other words, if the statistics of complete annihilation beat the statistics of staying alive in every moment that you're in, surely the only reason why you're alive is because the catastrophe is withheld. You're alive because of what has been granted and what is withheld. And to be human means to understand that. And understanding that you've been granted and the blessing granted and the catastrophe withheld is what informs your gratitude. You know, many societies of the world have a parallel idea between the idea of faith and the idea of trust. I have faith in him. I have trust in him. You know? Now, what's interesting about the word trust in that sense is that it looks into the future. I trust things will go right. Gratitude as a quality basically looks backward. Thank you for what you have done, for what I received. How do you propose to trust the future? How do you propose to have faith in that sense? How do you propose to have faith in Allah if you don't have gratitude? So it is this gratitude that unlocks the all of the things that makes being human not just tolerable but fulfilling. You know, if you let your imagination loose, a human intelligence loose, and all the things that could go wrong, you are not going to have a very pleasant life. You will look at the future with a spirit of distrust. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we should not be allowing these people to teach our children a sense of, of resentment about life, because it means they will not have faith going into the future. But not only does it enable faith and trust in that sense, because it's gratitude, but it also gives you all the reason that you need to deal with every situation that you're in with the intent to serve or give. And that produces a sense of security and fulfillment and power and harmony in your life. Truly, without faith, you are not properly human. You're a waste of a human skin. A human being has been made uniquely to experience a phenomenon which in English we call awe. Awe, A-W-E, awe. And you say, well, what is awe? It's the feeling that you have when you allow yourself to have a sense of perspective. You go up on a high mountain and you see there's a massive vista. How do you feel? You are in a state of awe. That awe is what worshipfulness is. When you say subhanAllah, that's what's coming out of your mouth is a celebration of that amazement at existence. Wa alaykum salam. There's two possible ways that you, as a very small one, looking out at this vast universe that our Rabb has graced us with, there's two ways you can respond to that. There's two ways that which is very small can respond to that which is obviously immense and overwhelming. You can either be in a state of awe, or you can be in a state of terror. There's no third possibility. It's the nature of the small one looks at the big, either, you're amazing, or just, you're terrifying. What makes it possible to have the awe rather than the terror is gratitude. Because when the gratitude translates your experience of the vastness of all of that into, but this thing is my friend. This thing is the face of my Rabb. This thing is my benefactor. This thing is my ally. It is on my side. That experience of awe is the unique human quality. I mean, I don't think so. You know, anything that gives you a sense of scale gives you a sense of awe, like stars in the desert. I mean, if you go out in the desert, you see this amazing, isn't it? Now imagine you and a baboon are sitting on opposite dunes. I don't think he has the same feeling. I don't think he does it. I want to, I just can't reach. The reason why we have is that we can, is that we are uniquely designed to experience scale. We know how small we are. We know how big that is. So our unique human accomplishment is awe. That is not possible in an ungrateful heart. Because an ungrateful heart cannot look at that wildness and bigness out there and say, that's amazing. As it can only look out and say, that's terrifying. Thank you, gentlemen. Alhamdulillah. May Allah grant us nearness to Him. May He grant us annihilation in Him. May He grant us a deep sense of security and fulfillment. May He grant us the very best of this world and of the next. In Allah wa malaikatuhu yusallu ala nabi ya ayyuha alladhina amanu sallu alayhi wa sallimu taslima. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammadin abdika wa rasulika nabiyyina wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallim taslima. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun wa salamun ala al mursalin. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.